May it please the court, I am Andrea McEwen on behalf of the petitioner appellant, Raymond Greppi. I would like to reserve 2 minutes, please. We're grateful for this opportunity to sharpen the lens by which you are viewing the medical evidence in this case. With a little attention to detail, you will find that the administrative law judge's hearing decision completely falls apart. Mr. Greppi has been diligently engaging in appropriate psychiatric care for the past decade to address the complex trauma that stems from ritualistic sexual violence he experienced over a period of years during his childhood, and complicated by multiple severe head injuries, having left a visible scar on his forehead as reflected in the medical record. Despite reliable evidence of multiple significant areas of impairment, the ALJ determined a residual functional capacity that had only one non-exertional limitation, frequent contact with supervisors, coworkers, and the general public. That decision is irrational and unsupportable. The judge erred in disregard.
Counsel, could you address what seems to be the crux of the ALJ decision is that the ALJ was rejecting the treating physician's testimony because it was inconsistent with the medical notes made by the treating physician. Could you address that?
Sure. So Dr. Montgomery supplied two pieces of opinion evidence, one in 2016 and one in 2017, as well as dozens of pages of progress notes. See, progress notes are for use in the therapeutic setting for the purpose of the treatment itself. They are not designed to capture limitations as it relates to an individual's ability to work. In fact, that is why mental impairment questionnaires exist, to capture those details. It wouldn't make sense for us to expect psychiatrists to fill out a 5-page form related to employability after a therapy session. What's captured in the progress notes and what's contained in the two MIQs are internally consistent. I should note that the 2016 and 2017 MIQs are based on different rubrics. So, of course, the ratings are different because they have different categories in them. But if you look at what's actually contained in those opinions, it's consistent in his areas of limitations. And the progress notes are a combination of objective and subjective evidence. And Mr. Greppi describes himself sometimes with moderate, sometimes with severe limitations. It's entirely appropriate that his treating provider renders an opinion that finds him more impaired than he sees himself. In fact, consistently throughout the progress notes, Dr. Montgomery notes that there is a limitation in Mr. Greppi's insight and judgment. So because he's the treating physician, he should be given the most deference, and disregarding all of his opinions are unsupportable. And the ALJ doesn't even lay out what weight he gives Dr. Montgomery's opinion generally. He assigns little weight to the 2017 report specifically, but he doesn't even address how much weight he's giving to the rest of the evidence in the record. But without fail, those progress notes do document anxiety and depression, reduced insight and judgment, and consistently document impaired concentration and attention. And I want to bring your attention to that, the concentration and attention, because The judge placed substantial weight solely on the opinion of Dr. Solomon, who was a non-examining physician who has never met Mr. Greppi, and who rendered her opinion 2.5 months after the claim was filed. She based her assessment on Dr. Montgomery's records, and she made a fundamental error in interpreting those records. If you look on page 109 of the excerpts of record, you will see that she claimed Dr. Montgomery assessed Mr. Greppi as having fair concentration. Right above her assessment is the analyst's assessment, where she quotes Dr. Montgomery's opinion. And what he says is, insight and judgment fair, semicolon, concentration and intention impaired. Dr. Solomon took that quote, fair, semicolon, concentration, and turned it into fair concentration. That is why the ALJ ultimately only gave a limitation in the area of interacting with others, because Dr. Solomon misinterpreted the records and he didn't catch that error. So her opinion is unsupported by the record, and his opinion is completely undermined.
Did you raise that error before the ALJ?
I inherited this case just before this hearing and or this oral argument, and so I just noticed it in the record, but it's a foundational error. And I don't think that, I think because all of the general arguments were raised, this falls under the umbrella of the arguments that have been raised. I would also like to discuss Dr. Abraham's report, which the ALJ similarly undermined and disregarded because he thought there was an error, but it was actually his interpretation that was an error. Dr. Abraham clearly states that, so the ALJ undermined it because he thought that she was under the impression that Mr. Greppi was still using hard drugs. But she's very clear in her report, page 675 of the record, that she is recognizing that he's using a little weed and a little alcohol, and she's just cautioning that that is risky behavior in her professional opinion, considering his longitudinal history of relapses. So she's not saying that she thinks that he's on meth. She's saying specifically what she believes he is doing and how she thinks that that is not advisable for someone with a long history of any time he encounters stress and loses his social support system, he completely falls out. So there's a little caution in there, but overall, materiality is not an issue in this case, and her opinion is not in conflict with that. The ALJ took such a superficial look at all of this that he rendered a decision entirely unsupportable. I believe that this case is appropriate to remand for payments and not for further proceedings. There are no conflicts and ambiguities. We just cleared up some what appeared to be ambiguities in the record, but really they were just a product of the ALJ not doing a satisfactory job.
Do you concede that your client then was using marijuana and alcohol?
He has talked about occasional social use of alcohol, and he has talked about occasional use of marijuana at times in this record. That is not a consistent issue in this record. And his PTSD, his personality disorder, his depression, his anxiety, these all produce dramatic limitations that are not created by those substances. And that's, as I said, materiality is indisputably not at issue in this case.
Would you explain to me once more why it was improper for the ALJ to discredit Dr. Montgomery's opinion, because in your view, there was no inconsistency in between his opinion and his notes?
So as a treating provider over the course of the past decade, his opinion is entitled to deference based on the multi-factor test, and disregarding his opinion with no foundation really undermines the integrity of that test. He is a child and adult psychiatrist. He's an MD. This is his job. There is no accusation in the record that he is lying, that he's making up his client's symptoms. He's been engaging in cognitive behavioral therapy with Mr. Greppi, not routine conservative treatment, as the commissioner alleges. And to reject his opinion requires specific and legitimate reasons based on a detailed and thorough summary of the facts and evidence. And that simply did not happen here.
What does routine mean to you?
What does routine mean to me?
Yeah, what would a routine course of treatment be? I'm just not familiar with that.
It's not a term I use. It's a term the commissioner used to discredit this intensive therapy treatment that Mr. Greppi's been engaging in. I think it's a throwaway word. It is meaningless, honestly. I'll add that Dr. Blank's opinion was also inexplicably not given any weight, or we don't know how much weight because the judge didn't mention it, but he found moderate limitations in emotional functioning. And if you look closely at his report, moderate is defined as functionally disabling. And the other non-examining physician, Dave Cubis, also found impairments. So everybody in this record found impairments. And the ALJ relied on Dr. Solomon, but he didn't understand that her opinion was flawed.
You're down to about 2 minutes. Do you want to reserve?
Okay. Yeah, I'll reserve. Thank you.
Ms. Fire?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Elizabeth Fear, and I represent Sandy Saul, the Commissioner of Social Security. Let me address that last point that my opponent made right away, that Dr. Blank found moderate limitations in emotional functioning that was disabling. If you look at page 463 in the record, it says moderate limitations are functioning satisfactorily. That's absolutely incorrect. I understand that a major factor in this case is what we would say is the disconnect between Dr. Montgomery's treatment notes and the extreme limitations that he assessed on the two checkbox forms that he filled out. And keep in mind here that Mr. Greppi is alleging that he has severe social anxiety to the point where he can't leave his house. He's saying that he has these uncontrollable anger issues that prevent him from working with other people. And none of that shows up in those treatment records. And there's a lot of those treatment records. The first part of them where you hear Mr. Greppi's complaints are labeled CC, which means chief complaint. And that's where you'll find the assertions of sadness, mild to moderate sadness over the course of the years. That's where he also says that his anxiety gets between mild and ends up being between moderate and severe. Those are his chief complaints. When you look at the MSE, the medical status examination, the findings are different. And admittedly, over the course of the years, Dr. Montgomery says that the claimant is impaired in attention and concentration, but he never defines that. And then you have at the end, the two doctors who examined the claimant last, Dr. Abraham and then Dr. Blank, found no limitations at all in concentration and attention. So that explains some of the disconnect that the agency has found between Montgomery's treatment record.
And may I ask you, while you're talking about Dr. Abraham, that the ALJ rejected Dr. Abraham's opinion and just said, see above. What does that mean? He said, as I recall, that the ALJ was not crediting Dr. Abraham's opinion for the same reasons that he was not crediting Dr. Montgomery's. I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense, because he was essentially discrediting Dr. Montgomery's because of Dr. Montgomery's treatment notes, but those aren't really at issue with Dr. Abraham. So can you explain to me what the ALJ was doing?
I admit it's a little bit sloppy. My take on that is that he's talking about how there's all these treatment records from Dr. Montgomery that don't show extreme limitations. And that's an inconsistency with the record that would apply also to Dr. Abraham. And as long as we're talking about Dr. Abraham, if you look at her findings, they're actually, again, she says he functions normal socially. He has no attention and concentration deficit. She says that he initially got angry with her and then immediately de-escalated it and became joking and able to answer the question. She also says he gives poor effort during his testing. She says that his test results are inconsistent with his clinical presentation. She says that he lacks motivation. She says he is manipulative in his behavior, dramatic in his behavior, that he blames other people for his problems, and that he presents himself in exaggerated ways to get attention and sympathy. So take all of that into the context, then she also says that his drug use is affecting his symptoms. And on page 675, she actually says many of the mood symptoms he complains of experiencing, including hostility, heightened anxiety, and social withdrawal, could be affected by his use of these substances, not abuse. It's undisputed that he's admitting he's still using marijuana and alcohol. So that does explain some of her limitations. And then she also, the rest of it is in this subjective presentation that he consistently makes about his history. First of all, he doesn't have documentation of a closed head injury. And when he does a CT scan during the course of one of his hospitalizations that's well before his alleged onset date, and while he's still abusing methamphetamines, the CT scan is normal. And even Dr. Abraham does a test for sequelae of a head injury, and it's negative. So he doesn't have some kind of closed head injury that's caused psychological problems. That's just not supported by the record. And the other thing that's not supported by the record is his allegations that he's left all of these jobs because he can't get along with people. And I would like to, in the beginning of the testimony, he talked a lot about his past work. And one of the things he says is that he was trained as an electrician, which is the job he's had the longest, by journeymen. If you're being trained by journeymen, you have to interact with them. The job that he had as the hood cleaner, which he also had for 3 years, he said he left that job because it was physically demanding, it was at night, it involved too much travel, and it made him frazzled. That has nothing to do with interacting with people. And then if you go to, so it's only what he says.
Can I ask you, we can always find inconsistencies and problems in records that have a lot of medical evidence in them. But what I'm troubled here is that in this case, the treating physician and both examining physicians appeared to conclude that he had real problems. And the ALJ rejected all of those and went with a consulting physician's opinion, who was just looking at the records and had never met this fellow. I am not familiar with any case where the ALJ has rejected the treating physician and all of the examining physicians in favor of someone who has never seen the applicant. And I'm just wondering, do you have any cases where that has happened? It seems quite odd.
Honestly, Your Honor, the case that you, well, your most recent published Social Security case, Ford v. Saul, 950 F3rd 1141, has that. Going back to the ALJ, he didn't really accept any particular medical opinion in this record. But if you look at it, you have the extremes from Dr. Solomon, who found no severe, all the way to Dr. Montgomery, who finds extreme limitations that really don't have any other support in the record except for claiming account of those limitations. So an ALJ has to look at the record as a whole. And what he came up with here is that claimant has some social problems, but they are not supported to the extreme level that he has alleged. And Your Honor, I would say that I don't think Dr. Blank found particularly significant impairment, but for the moderate emotional limitation he found, which we are arguing is accommodated with the frequent, only frequent contact with other people. And if you look at in the RFC, and if you look at plaintiff's work history, it really doesn't support that he's not able to interact with other people.
I thought he hadn't worked since 2011.
That is true. But since 2011, he's become clean and sober. Well, for the most part, he's not abusing meth anymore. He's been undergoing treatment with Dr. Montgomery, where he's been on a very steady regimen of medications. He says at the hearing on page 72, the medications don't make me feel not horrible, but they don't make me feel wahoo great. So he's admitting that his medications have stabled him out, and you know, he doesn't feel great, but you don't have to feel great to go to work. And the last, and he did, but the job that he had in 2011 was arguably the most intensive job he had. That was the waste management job where he said he was operating a plant. But he also tells very different stories about that case. He in the record, he says, that in a treatment record, that he worked 8 to 4:30. Then at the examination with Dr. Abraham, he says that job was 18 hours a day. And then at the hearing, he says it's 16 hours a day. So there's a lot of inconsistency in the way he's describing his past work, which I would argue to the court to take what he says about those jobs with a grain of salt. And then the last job that he had was the one at Tesla, where his reason for quitting was because the females were jealous of his prowess at the job. So I don't think we can say that this record objectively supports his allegations about why he can't work. And let's look at why he says he can't work. It's that he has this anger disorder that makes him hard to deal with people. He's never been diagnosed with an anger disorder. And when he was at the hospital, one of the hospitals, after even in his drug abusing state, they said that his instance of harming people was very low. I'll find that, can't remember where that site is, but it's in one of the Kaiser hospital records. So then he also says he has these side effects that make him unable to work with heavy machinery, drowsiness. That's also not in the record anywhere. The first time drowsiness shows up is on one of Dr. Montgomery's check forms. And then the other thing is with social phobia, and we don't have, he's proven himself capable of learning at the job by interacting with people. He has...
Counsel, what are we to make of the ALJ's second hypothetical to the vocational expert on the RFC, where the ALJ hypothesized that the claimant can only occasionally respond to supervisors. Did that mean that the ALJ thought that he could only occasionally respond to supervisors?
No, Your Honor. That's in the course of an administrative hearing, a lot of different hypothetical questions are posed to vocational experts. The only one that matters is the one that the ALJ ultimately finds is the RFC. So, you know,
but there was a reason why the ALJ asked that question.
What was the reason why?
What was the reason why? And there had to have been a reason why.
because he's posing different limitations that have been assessed throughout the record. That's a fact. There are these different limitations by different sources throughout the record. That doesn't mean the ALJ finds them the ultimately supported limitations. So that's a very typical thing that ALJs will do. And if you'll notice, claimants' attorneys often ask, if someone missed 4 days of work a week, can they do any work? Or if someone can't work 8 hours a day, can they do any work? And, you know, an ALJ is not going to find those to be the supported limitations in the record. So that's a very common fact situation. So ultimately, the ALJ, and yes, the decision could be more detailed. That's always the case. But the ALJ summarized all of the examinations, summarized Dr. Montgomery's records accurately. And I will add to those. So those records say that claimant has fair insight and judgment. And my opponent used fair in terms of doctors, one of the state agency doctors, misstatements. So if fair means good in that context, then it means good in the context of insight and judgment. So there's always, you know, he always has good, he's good with presentation. His affect actually improves throughout the course of treatment. It goes from flat to appropriate. And he's got the, you know, good fund of knowledge. So given the extreme allegations that this claimant is making, Dr. Montgomery's treatment records just don't support that. You would think at some point he would explain an incident where he had some kind of social problem with me, where he lost his temper. But instead he takes part, he goes to the store, he moved in with a woman during all of this. I mean, this record just doesn't support the three reasons the claimant says he can't work: the social anxiety, the anger outburst, and the medication side effects. So unless you have any further questions, we ask that you uphold the ALJ decision as did the district court.
Any further questions? All right, thank you. Ms. McKeown, you have to.
If the ALJ had not rejected all of the medical evidence, he would have had no foundation to reject all of the witness testimony either. And the commissioner goes to great lengths to discredit Mr. Greppi. And in her briefing suggests, as does the ALJ, that he made up the diagnosis of PTSD. And I want to draw your attention to page 602 of the record. In 2011, where Kaiser is discussing his PTSD, also PTSD is listed as the initial impairment on the initial application, and it's listed as on the initial denial letter in October of 2015. So before he even files this claim, he's been through 9, you'll see in the record, different psychotropic medications. He settled on a regimen of Abilify, Klonopin, and one other. But through his work with Dr. Montgomery, his dosages increased. And he explains in the Kaiser records that once he stops using meth, he finally is confronted with the feelings from what happened in his childhood, and he's actively working through that for the first time in his life. So he is in a protected environment. He's in a supportive environment where he doesn't leave his house unless he takes a tranquilizer. That is the only way he leaves his house. That's what the Klonopin is for. And when in the 12.0 listing, Social Security explains that the more support you need, the more impaired you are. So Mr. Greppi found someone that loves him, puts a roof over his head, feeds him, gives him his medications, and he can paint in isolation. That doesn't make him employable. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you both for your arguments today, Ms. McKeown, Ms. Fear, and we will take this matter under submission. Thank you very much.